everybody. Mark C. has a quick announcement here.
Hello? Hello? Okay.
Mark, hi.
Hi, my name is Mark, and I have a public service announcement. We have an adjustment. There were 94 years of birthdays, so that's one announcement. Also, I like to announce how many people come to the meeting. There are 162 of us tonight, 46 women, okay, and 116 men. Does that add up right? Yeah. And the other thing is there's only 196 hours to Valentine's Day. So, you know, thank you.
Thank you, Mark. All right, folks, if we can take our seat, we have a wonderful opportunity to hear a speaker this evening. Cool. Her name is Christine. She's been in the program for 31 years. Yes. Anybody beat that tonight? You might be top dog tonight, Christine. And so I'd like to welcome, and can we put our hands together for Christine?
Hi, my name's Christine Albertson, and I'm a grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon. Shit, 31 years. I got to come up with something really good. Actually, on Saturday, I will have 32 years. So, and I'm one of those believers that you don't take your cake until you get there, but I think I'll make it Saturday. So, I'm fine until now. You know, it's almost like being in denial, you know, where I don't really give a lot of thought of what it is I'm going to say. I've been in the program long enough to know that if you think too much about it, you're going to get up. Somebody said that they forgot everything that they were going to say anyway. That's what happens today, because I think that God's with me this minute saying what it is that I need to be saying for me. I was sharing with Trish. I want to thank Trish for driving me down here tonight. That, you know, when you tell people a month in advance and they have a whole month to try to figure out what they're going to say, what I've come to realize being in the program is I've got a whole month of each day something different happening. So you waste a lot of time and energy trying to figure out what it is you're going to say a month later, because none of that stuff ever happens anyway. And, you know, one more time, my best ideas got me into these rooms. I'll go back a little bit of what it was like before Al-Anon. You know, and when I say that, I mean, I've been in Al-Anon so long. I remember when I had been in Al-Anon 27 years, and that was like 27 years then was half my life. I don't know if that makes any sense. It doesn't make any sense. It makes sense to me. But, you know, I had a pretty normal childhood. My mother was married four times. but you see what I'm saying? To me, that was normal. I mean, it's like, you know, a lot of my friends had, you know, quite a few parents. My dad drank. My parents got divorced when I was 4 or 5. My mother remarried when I was 5 years old. And I used to go and stay with my father. And my dad used to drink a lot, apparently, because my stepmother constantly told me when I was 5, Christine, your dad's a drunk. Your dad's a drunk. And, you know, I'm a little girl. I go into my dad and I go, Donna says that you're a drunk. And he says, no, I'm not. I only drink beer. And I would go in with my little hand on my hip and go, no, he's not. He only drinks beer. You know, because, of course, I believe what my dad says and not what my stepmother says. So anyway, what ended up happening is I pretty much had, to me, a normal childhood, even though my mother was married a few times. And the second man that she was married to was awesome, great. He died just before I was 16. They were married 13 years, and he was 34, and he had his fourth and final heart attack, and he passed away. My mother got married again to a man that was horrifying. Didn't like him. None of us liked him. You know, but it's amazing, because when I start talking about my recovery part, it'll go back and share a little bit of some of the past stuff that I'm just kind of getting you up to where I was. Okay. I got married when I was 20 to my first husband. Today, I look back, really dull and boring, definitely not an alcoholic, does not have that edge, does not have, but I think that the excitement of him at the time was, I was 17 and he was 24, he was forbidden, he was a no-no. Little bit of excitement there, really kind of boring now. Then I was single until I was again 29. Okay, but we're not talking about that yet. All right, so before that, you know, I dated and I had, you know, boyfriends that always wanted to get married. I don't want to get married, but I always tell them I'll marry them and don't get married to them. And then I started dating a man, and my first date with him, I was 27 years old, and no, I was actually 25. My first date with him was to an AA meeting. We went to Cantor's. We went to Cantor's over on the west side on Fairfax for dinner, and we're driving down the street. I think we're going to go to a movie or something, and he says, so how would you feel like going to an AA meeting with me? Sure, I'll go with you to an AA meeting. I had no idea what an AA meeting was, but I went. We went to the Rodeo meeting in Beverly Hills. Great. A zillion people, great, and oh my God, they were so entertaining, they were so cool, and I absolutely fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, even though I wasn't an alcoholic. We went to meetings like that for about a year and a half, and we went to 4 to 7 AA meetings a week. I went to open AA meetings with him a week for a year and a half. Nobody ever said anything to me about Al-Anon. Nobody ever mentioned to me about Al-Anon. He was an attorney, and we went to a bar meeting on a Wednesday night, which was a group of attorneys that were all in AA, and one of the wives said, have you ever been to an Al-Anon meeting? And I said, no. What is it? Friends, families, and relatives. And I said, okay. She said, would you like to go? And I said, yes. One more time. I'm pretty open still today to new experiences and trying new things. So I went. My first Al-Anon meeting was at the Clare Foundation over in Culver City. It was at 10 o'clock in the morning, meeting on a Monday, 10 or 12, I can't remember now, it's been so long. And every person in that room was living with a practicing violent alcoholic. Every single spouse or boyfriend drank, and they were all being beaten. I went home and I said to him, well, I don't need those meetings. You're sober and you don't beat me. You know, I'm not going back to those rooms. 6 months later, I was having living problems. I have no idea what happened. I don't know why. I just knew that I was uncomfortable. I wasn't happy. I always felt alone. And yet I was living with somebody that was sober. And so I started going back to meetings. And, you know, being in Al-Anon, I hear now, and, you know, took a long time for me to really hear this and understand this, because I didn't think about it, because I don't really focus on the past and that stuff. But stuff has been revealed with my relationship with him is, you know, when I started going to Al-Anon, all of a sudden he didn't want me to go. He found another meeting for me to go to. He wanted me to get to another meeting. He wanted me to go with him to another AA meeting. And what was happening is I was starting to get a little bit better, get a little bit more self-esteem. I went to my meetings. I went to a Wednesday night. The Brentwood meeting became my home group meeting for 10 years. I went to the Wednesday night Brentwood meeting. And, you know, it's funny today because, you know, when I look back now, you know, all the meetings back then when I was new, they were all 8:30 to 10 o'clock meetings. You know, now you've got 7 o'clock to 7, you know, to 8:30 meetings. You have 7:30 to 9 o'clock meetings. Back when I was new in the program, the meetings were 8:30 to 10, and they were also, all the commitments were a year. They weren't 6 months. They weren't 3 months. The commitments were a year. So there's a lot of things that I see that have changed, but not in a bad way, but things that are different from me today. I went to my home group meeting, and you guys are listening to me now. I don't have a problem talking. It's even like what Ben said, you know, I probably don't need this. You can probably hear me. And but my first Wednesday night meeting that I went to, I went into the room, and I sat on a chair that was right by the door. And that's where I sat for the next 9 months. And if somebody was sitting in that chair when I got there, I sat right next to them and I stared at them all the way through the meeting. You know, I was also sharing that back when I was new, that instead of having phone lists like they do now, they used to just send around a pad, and you would put your name and your number, and then the following week, if there was somebody that you really liked or you identified with, you'd take down their number, you would talk to them then. Those first 9 months, I would sit and I would take notes. I took a pad of paper with me and I took notes. And, you know, like they say now, take what you like and leave the rest. I would write down the things that I thought maybe I was capable of doing, like act as if, contrary action. My very first contrary action was something so simple and so silly. It was just driving a different way home from the meeting than I had gone. That was all it was, just driving a different way home. And from that time on, and I know it may sound strange, and then maybe not, because you guys are all an Al-Anon, and some of you are an A. My life started changing. You know, the act as if you're happy today, even though you were so pissed off. Oh, yeah, I'm happy. You know, and I started doing those things. I got a sponsor, and I got into service right away at that meeting. And back then, it's so funny now because it always sounds so long ago. I cleaned ashtrays. They smoked at the meetings, and I cleaned the ashtrays. And you didn't just rinse them. You washed them with soap and water, and you dried them. And then you put them out on the night of your meeting, and then you clean them again. And that was my first commitment. Then, of course, en route, I did all the other commitments at my meeting. And I also went to a lot of other meetings. When I was in the program for, I guess, a little over a year, I got, it was probably a little bit before that, because I had, you know, it's like what they talk to you about. You know, I had these three women that used to always swoop in on me. They used to always swoop in. So one of them, of course, became my sponsor. And she was my sponsor for a year. And then what happened is she decided that she was an alcoholic, and that she was going to be going to AA meetings, and that I could still, you know, have her as my sponsor if I wanted to. But for me, because of going to open AA meetings as long as I did, I really heard for an alcoholic, their first and foremost program was AA. That their AA program was their first and foremost. And for me, I needed a 100% Al-Anon sponsor. I needed somebody that their first and foremost program was Al-Anon. So what I did is I changed to my sponsor, who I had also been around for a year. And that woman has been my sponsor to date. I have never had a reason to have to change from her. She still has what I want. She practices the principles. She had four boys and a daughter. Her husband was sober, very active in the program. She was on the first 12-step panel for Al-Anon, where the girls drove around for years, sharing on the steps of recovery in Al-Anon. One of the things that I got better in that relationship, and I moved on. I moved on. We broke up, blah, 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 and swore I would never get involved with another alcoholic. Swore up and down. Almost got into a fist fight one night at my Al-Anon meeting with my sponsor, because not with my sponsor, with one of the other girls, but we had to go to her, you know, because she had to mediate us. And my friend was going to be getting married to an alcoholic, and I told her, what's wrong with you? Haven't you learned enough? Haven't you been in Al-Anon long enough to know that you don't go find another one? And so we were like almost in fisticuffs, and, you know, and she had to come and talk to me and tell me, yeah, it's gonna be okay. That's what she wants to do. It may not be what you want to do. But, I mean, that's still where I was at that time. You know, of course, I ended up getting married to another alcoholic years later. Well, not years later, but a couple of years later. And going back to the first person I came into the program, I would go to meetings with him and listen to him talk. And you talk about walking the way you talk. He didn't do any of the things that he would share from the podium. Nothing. Nothing. I was at home and it was like, who am I living with? This is not the same person. It was scary. But he looked good in front of all of the alcoholics and he said all the right things. He did all the good things. But I knew the truth because I actually lived there. So then when I started dating this other man, he had 6 years of sobriety. And the scary thing with me was, is because I kind of then watched him a little bit, you know, because he walked the way he talked. He actually did. And for a long period of time, I had him like up on a pedestal. The scary thing was that somewhere in our relationship, I knocked him down and it took me a while to be able to get us up to be equals. And that wasn't him. That was me. We were married for 13 years. We were married for 17 years. We've been divorced for 13. We are still best friends. We have a 29-year-old son. My son goes in and out of Al-Anon when he feels like it. He knows about the program. He never saw his dad drink, and I've always been in Al-Anon. And he's a good kid. You know, he's actually a good kid. He practices the principles, but he's a little bit... Well, he's a little bit edgy like me. He's a little off. He's a little bit off. But he's good. I don't know if that makes any sense, but he's good. He's a good kid. Let me see. Am I missing anything important? Oh, yeah. I better go back to the steps. So I want to talk about that a little bit, too, because when I was new and I came to meetings and you guys talked about God, I hated it. Hated it. Hated it. Didn't want to hold your hand when you said the Lord's Prayer. Didn't want to say the Serenity Prayer. Really turned me up. Don't know when that changed in my life. Yes, I do. I was at a Tuesday 10 o'clock in the morning meeting, and there was a woman named Harriet that sat in this meeting, and she was talking about her higher power one day. And I listened to a lot of other people talk about it, and you hear, you know, of your own understanding, but you know, when you really don't have any understanding anyway, it really doesn't make any difference because you don't know what your own understanding is. And she sat there, and no joke, she had a medallion on her that was gold, ugliest thing you've ever seen, and it was about this big. That was her higher power. Now, I identified with that. And don't ask me why, but I got it. So I pretty much then at that time knew it could be anything in the world. My ex-husband, it was interesting to me because he talked about what his higher power was when he first got sober, and it was a mountain. He got sober at Double Check Retreat down in Hemet, and he had a mountain, because he knew he couldn't screw with that mountain. He couldn't move with it, and he'd sit out there and go, mountain, if you want me drunk, then you get me drunk. And I understood that, too. Okay, where am I now? Steps. Okay. So anyway, the powerless part is, you know what? I think I came into the program because I was unmanageable. So my first step was a little bit backwards. My life was unmanageable, and then I became powerless. Today, I think it's really important when we talk about the first step with a newcomer, as opposed to saying, you know, I'm powerless over people, places, and things, is because we're really here because of the disease of alcoholism, and I am truly, truly powerless over alcoholism today. Always have been. My father drinks on a daily basis. Got to go back to that in a minute. But anyway, the steps started becoming very important to me. Before I married Tony, my sponsor said it was time for me to do my fourth step, and I did. And I remember Tony coming home, and I was so excited. And I said, oh, my God, I'm so excited. I have a list of character defects. And he goes, well, it's about time, you know. Because, you know, I was always kind of a little kooky and a little crazy, and I never really knew why. I didn't know why I did the things I did. Once I did my fourth step and I started figuring these things out, then I knew jealousy, envy, anger. I knew all of these things. My biggest character defect was expectations. I want you guys to be very proud of me today. I've been in the program for a while, and I think 4 years ago, expectations is not my first and foremost character defect, you know, and that's huge because every time I went back and had to do something, it always came back to an expectation. I really don't have any expectations today of people. It doesn't mean that I wouldn't do something different than you do, but I really don't expect you to be like me today. You know, it used to be really important that you think the way I did, you did things the way I did. Today, I don't really care. You know, a lot of wasted energy trying to get everybody to think my way and do things my way. For a long time, up until about 10 years ago, I used to say, you know, I don't give a shit what anybody thinks about me. I still don't, but I don't say that so much anymore. What I say today is, it's not my business what you think of me. It's my business what I think of you. And it's true today. You know, as long as I'm not driving over somebody in your family with a Mack truck, you know what? I don't really care what you think of me. You know, I'm kind of happy, go-lucky, kind of kooky, and I kind of march to my own drummer, and I'm okay with that. Anyway, so I did the four-step, character defects, amends that I needed to make, did that, worked the steps, still do the 10th step, which is really, really important to me. I continue to take a personal inventory every night. One of the things that I learned when I was new, still do today, I do a gratitude list every single night before I go to bed. And, you know, I have some of the people that I sponsor go, well, can't I just say it while I'm in the shower? Yeah, sure you can, but that's not what worked for me. I needed to always write stuff down. You know, when I changed into Carol from my other sponsor, I remember Carol telling me she wanted me to do a gratitude list. And at that point in time, I really didn't have anything to be grateful for. In all honesty, I couldn't think of one thing to be grateful for. And she asked me, do you have a refrigerator? And I said, yeah. She says, okay, put one and put refrigerator. You know, so I did. So then she said, okay, all right, now do two. Okay. Well, what did you write? She said, does that refrigerator have a handle? Just shows you how cuckoo I was. Today, I have no problems coming up with things that I have to be grateful for. I have no problems at all. Anyway, I got married to Tony. Okay, now we're divorced already, and we have a son, and so now what? Oh, I know. Okay, I was in the program for 3 years before I came to the realization. One more time, I was at the Windsor Club at a meeting, and that 12-step panel that I talked to you guys about that my sponsor was on, one of the girls that was on the panel with her, each one did, you know, 3 steps, and then there was the driver, so there were 5 girls. And one of the girls was talking about how both of her parents drinking bothered her. I had a light bulb go off, like, unbelievable. I was in the program for 3 years before I realized that both of my parents drank. And I truly think that God gave me the foundation in Al-Anon to be able to deal with that. My mother drank all the time, got very ugly, belligerent, whatever, but I learned to take the label off of mom, and would I allow another person to treat me like that? Absolutely not. I think truly because of me practicing the principles and the steps and traditions in my life, that I really do think that when I take care of me, all of you fall into place and start behaving. I don't know why that is, but it's true. Everybody kind of takes care of themselves when I stay out of it. So anyway, my mother died 10 years ago. I want to say to everybody whose parents have passed away, I'm really, really sorry. One of the hardest things that I had to go through still is hard for me. My mother was my best friend. She was only 17 years older than me, and my mother drank. My mother drank. She had a disease of alcoholism. And you know what? She was the greatest person. She was a good mother. She worked every day, but when she drank, the alcohol just took her over, and she was not so fun to be around, but I could remove myself and tell her, I love you, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And I did that with her for years, and I have had a completely different relationship with her than my brother and sister did, and it's because of this program. My father, who is as cute as can be, my dad is 79, he called me the other day to tell me he's making his will. And that he needs me to know where it is, but he's not going to tell me yet because he's not close enough yet. But as soon as he knows where it's going to be, he's going to tell me. My dad drinks on a daily basis. He has lived in junkyards. He has lived in a camper shell behind a furniture store for 4 years. He has lived in a creek. And what I've learned in Al-Anon is to allow people the dignity to do things the way that they need to do it. I love and adore my dad. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for him, except let him come live with me. I let him come and stay at my house. He's as cute as can be. He goes and he gets his beer. Or he gets my friends. It's so funny. My friends that are not in Al-Anon. He calls mom and says, she won't go get me beer. Will you go get me beer? I come home. He's got 12 packs of beer, you know. But he, one more time, he behaves. I can't explain it to you. I've had to take my father home with unacceptable behavior. That it's not okay, Daddy. It's not okay for you to talk like that in my home. And I'm perfectly fine taking him home. So guess what? He doesn't talk like that in my home anymore. He just doesn't. I'm special. My dad loves me, you know, and he wants to be able to spend time with me. But unacceptable behavior to me today is not okay. Is not okay. I've learned that everybody in these rooms, including, you know, you and my dad, all have their own higher power, and each person has their own journey, and I'm not in charge of any of that. Which, you know, you talk about that unmistakable sense of responsibility. What I got into Al-Anon after a period of time, I understood why I was, like, tired. You know, I was tired. I always had to take care of everybody. I always had to make sure you were happy. Screw me and screw if I was happy. You know, you needed to be happy. You needed to be happy. You know, today, you know what? I need to be happy. I need to be happy. And if I'm happy, one more time, everybody else is kind of happy and everybody else kind of goes off and does what they need to do. Makes my life a lot easier. I don't live in my past. And it's interesting to me because when I used to talk to my sponsor about it, she used to say I was pretty good about not projecting. You know, that I wasn't a big projector. And I was more interested in living in my ex-husband's past than I was even in my past. You know, so why did you do that? That was so stupid. And, you know, not that it really had an impact on my life today, but I truly do believe in that thing is look where your feet are and that's where you are today. You know, we drove down here tonight and Trish was so cute and we were on the freeway and she'd never been here and I was kind of like, okay, never mind, I'm not telling. So anyway, but anyway, it was really cute. And back in the olden days, it would have been something that I would have been screaming and yelling. And, you know, I kind of just turn everybody else's will and their lives over to God, too, and mine. I need to talk about this a little bit because I know with the economy the way it is, I want you to know that I've gone through the time that I've been in this program. And I want you to know this is something that I've learned a lot from my ex-husband, whose name is Tony, who is an AA, and he doesn't care if I tell you that. I've learned a lot of really important things from the alcoholics in my life. You know, and one of them is to remove the word blame from my vocabulary. Another person can be 100% wrong. The only person who has to practice the principles is me. And that's really important for me today because I can look at you and say, okay, you're not doing that right. But you know what? You don't need to do it right. I do. I need to do what's right for me today. The other thing is, I talk to him when I can't get in touch with my sponsor. And I have a couple of really good friends that have been in the program for a long time that I talk to. And if I can't, I call Tony. He lives in Kansas City. And you know what? And I don't know what it is, but it's like, you know, that hole that they talk about sometimes that you get and you're just in it like a dilemma or you really don't know what's going on. I can call him on the phone and go, oh my God, and this and this and this. And you know, all he has to say is, Christine, God is or isn't. And that's all I need. That's all I need. And it fills that thing and I get it. I get that stuff today because I know that God takes care of me today, my higher power, pair of shoes, if it's a pair of shoes that day, I don't, but that's being funny. The other thing, there was something else that was important that I can't think of right now, so it's not that important. Oh, yes, I do. This is important. This is the thing I was going to talk about in the first place. With the economy the way it is I've gone through periods of time in the time that I've been in the program. Losing jobs, not having jobs, not making any money, blah, 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 blah. And the bottom line is, one more time, I learned from him that I had to turn my will and my life over, because he's been in that place a lot of times. He was a struggling musician and all that. And so through the time I've been in this program, that's happened, where I've gone with no job for a period of time. And in all honesty, what I do is I just pray for God's will for me on a daily basis, and I have the willingness to do the footwork of whatever it is that I need to be doing. I work in the movie industry, haven't worked in it for a couple of years now, and decided I wanted to do something different, like work from an eight to five job, because I haven't done that in like 30 years. And it was like, I had no idea what to do with myself when I got home at 5 o'clock. What do people do when they get home at 5 o'clock? I had a learning experience for me. It's like I had no idea. Well, anyway, then I got a job. And, I mean, I had that job. And I did that job for a year, and I broke my foot at work. So last June, I broke my foot at work, and I was at home for 3 months with a no-weight cast, and I had to sit at home. And thank God for this program and my friends that would come and visit. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. I wasn't allowed to do anything. I was on a no-weight cast. Plus, the week before that, I had broken my hand. I had surgery on my hand. So I was with a walker and a platform with my hand and really couldn't do anything. But I was still grateful, you know, that I could get up and go to the bathroom by myself. It wasn't easy. But there, you know, one more time, you go back to the gratitude stuff. Well, anyway, so then I went back to work for 3 weeks and got laid off. So I've been laid off from work, or I don't want to say laid off anymore. I just don't have a job. I don't have a job. And I haven't had a job since September. And it's okay. I get up every morning about 6 o'clock. I go online. I look for every job. I don't care what it is. Dog walking, senior care. I have filled out more applications, and all I have gotten to date was I take care of 3 children 2 days a week, 5 hours a day. So that's as much as I've been able to do. Plus, I sell candles. That's irrelevant. Well, not really, because I make a little bit of money doing that. But one more time, what I'm saying is I have faith that I'm going to be taken care of, but I have to have the willingness to do the footwork. And I have that. You know, I don't beat myself up every day. Well, that's not true. If I go in and try to watch a movie for 2 hours, I feel guilty. I need to be back in online. So the other day I watched a movie. It took me from 8 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock to watch the entire movie. Because I'm in really doing footwork to try to be able to take care of myself. I have 3 puppies. Somebody else tonight said something about being angry, that they get angry. And it's like, you know what? For me today, I don't have anybody to get angry at. You know, I don't. I live by myself. I have 3 dogs. They're angels, although one of them barks a lot. But my life is good today. My life is good. You know, I have loving friends. I have great friends in Al-Anon. I have great friends outside of Al-Anon. My sister, I may want to talk about that a little. My sister, about 9 years ago, 8.5 years ago, called me, and my sister had gone with me to Al-Anon off and on during the time I was in the program, and my sister really never got it with my mom. She always called my mother an alcoholic, always thought we needed to have interventions, and I would tell her, go ahead, do it. I'm not going to participate. And, she called me, about 8.5 years ago and asked me if I would go with her to a meeting, to an Al-Anon meeting. And I said, oh, yeah, sure, you're going to come back to Al-Anon. And I said, are you going because of, you know, the person that she was going with, because it wasn't because of my mom? And she said no, that she had decided that she was in a 12-step program. And the funny thing for me is, because in all honesty, you guys, you have to understand something about me, is unless somebody is being belligerent or self-destructive or something, I don't really notice that people drink. I really don't. I have no, I guess it's not something I focus on. You know, I don't focus on people's drinking. Well, apparently my sister drank. And it was news to me because I didn't have any idea. And, excuse me. And so about December 1st, I was at my Monday night meeting and I got a phone call. And my sister had gone and put herself into a hospital. And one more time, the disease is cunning and baffling. And in all honesty, I don't know exactly what it is that she's doing, but I love and adore her. I talk to her, you know, nowhere near as much as I did up until, you know, I talk to her probably every day, two or three times a day up until December 1st. Don't talk to her that much, but I know that she's in God's hands and she'll be taken care of. You know, I love and adore my sister. She's the coolest thing. She's cute. She's darling. She's got three kids. But I'm also grateful that I don't have to go through the living problems that my sister goes through with her kids and her husband who she's separated from right now. So because of this program, I pretty much focus on me, which is not the way I was when I got here. And that's important to me today. Do I need to still talk? I do? Okay. I'm trying to think of anything that to say. Oh, I'm really good friends with my ex-husband. Tony and I are really, really good friends, and we've been, and he's actually dating. He just told me he's dating, and that was kind of like weird because then I asked him a million questions. And it's kind of, we've got a really good relationship because of this program. We went through a divorce living in the same house for 9 months. Our attorneys couldn't even believe it because we were civil, we were nice, and you know, my feeling is today is, and it doesn't matter that it's just with him. It's like, my feeling is I fell in love with people when I was with them, and there's no reason for me to dislike them or not like them now. We may have grown apart or done something different, which is what happened in our relationship, and we are really good friends today. It's also really nice for my son. So, okay, what else do I have to say? Jack just smiled. Oh, I've known Jack for a really long time. Yes, I've known Jack. Okay, that's another thing. And so the other thing is, too, is in this room, I know a lot of people that I've seen in the years that I've been in the program. And it's always so nice to see people that you haven't seen for a while, that you see at conventions or whatever. Jack, I see a lot. And I used to work with Jack, and Jack was a hoot. And he's better. He's better today. And I was at his wedding to Leslie. Thank you, Leslie. And so I've known Jack. I was there when Jack came in to Al-Anon, and it was the weirdest thing. I think I was taking a cake. I was taking a cake that day, and Jack came walking. It was like, whoa, it's amazing the people that you meet and you see in these rooms. I've been to meetings that somebody else shared. One of the birthday people shared about, I want what I want or something. And when I used to, you know, my sponsor would say to me, I want what I want when I want it. And Carol would say to me, yeah, and God, what God says is you'll get what I've got when I get it. And it was like, oh, okay, that's good. Because it's not always in my time or when I want it. I had to learn patience, but, you know, it was one of those things that you had. I want patience, but I want it now. I had to learn patience. You know, it's truly, to me, you get things when you're supposed to get them. I was never one of those people that said, you know, I wish I would have gotten here 20 years earlier. I truly am a believer that you get here when you're supposed to get here. If you would have gotten here 20 years ago, you wouldn't have gotten what you're getting now. I was 27 when I came into the program, and it's so funny because I love, can I say Nestor. I love Nestor because Nestor thinks I'm older than the hills. And it's always so cute to me because I remember that. I remember that even though I was 27. I mean, that was still kind of old. But when I first came to the program, all the ladies had blue hair and they all knit. They all knit. But you know what? They had the most spiritual and the greatest things to say. They had the greatest things to say, and that's what kept me coming back. And they used to always say, keep coming back, keep coming back. 5 minutes, okay, I'll do it really fast, 5 minutes, okay. Oh, but now I know what I need to say, because this is what got me really starting to share at Al-Anon. There was a man named George at my Wednesday night meeting, and like I said, as if the book came to me, I'd pass. I'd say my name and I'd pass. I never talked. I never said anything. And this man, I would see him coming when I was in the coffee room during the coffee break, and I would run and try to get out of dust because I knew he was going to corner me. And one night he caught me, and it, you know, and it was like, and I stood there, and he, very nice, and he said, you know, Christine, I understand how you feel. He said, I was never able to talk in a meeting either. He said, I was too afraid to ever open my mouth or say anything. So he said, what I started doing is saying, hi, my name is George, and I'm happy to be here. The following week at my meeting, I raised my hand. That was the first time I'd ever talked at that meeting, and I raised my hand, and I said, my name is Christine, and I'm happy to be here. Now, I want you to know, I didn't know whether I was happy to be there or not, but it seemed to have worked for him. And that's what I started doing. It goes back to the contrary action and acting as if. And from that time on, I became more comfortable in that meeting and became more comfortable sharing. I've never had a problem sharing on one-to-one with my sponsor. There's not anything that woman does not know about me. For the newcomers, sponsorship, going to different meetings. If you come to a meeting and you don't like it, there's a zillion other meetings in La Cañada, Santa Clarita, the Valley, the West Side. There's a zillion meetings. I moved out to Santa Clarita, and it was like culture shock to me because I was from the West Side where you had a billion meetings a day everywhere. I moved to Santa Clarita, and there were hardly any meetings. There are more now, thank goodness. But for a long time, I still drove to the West Side two or three times a week. Also, to let you know, somebody shared about being willing to drive down here tonight in the rain, that they would go out looking for the alcoholic anywhere. My sponsor lived in Covina, and I went out there three nights a week for a lot of years. I was willing to go to any lengths to get better. And I don't find that as much today. As I did back then. There's a lot of things that are a little bit different than they were back then, but I'm a really old school Al-Anon, so I pretty much keep it real pure and real Al-Anon into the steps and to the traditions. I don't care what meetings I go to. The traditions are really, really, really important. And that's how I live my life. And thank you.